The ACB Braille Forum, Volume 62, May 2024, Number 11. Published by the American Council of the Blind. Read by Nancy Gahagan, Bart Morse, and Thomasine Berg in the recording studio of the Perkins Library. Be a part of ACB. The American Council of the Blind, trademark, is a membership organization made up of more than 70 state and special interest affiliates. To join, contact the national office at 1-800-424-8666. Contribute to our work. Those much-needed contributions, which are tax-deductible, can be sent to Attention Treasurer, ACB, 6200 Shingle Creek Parkway, Suite 155, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, 55430. If you wish to remember a relative or friend, the National Office has printed cards available for this purpose. Consider including a gift to ACB in your last will and testament. If your wishes are complex, call the National Office. To make a contribution to ACB by the combined federal campaign, use this number, 11155. Check in with ACB. For the latest in legislative and governmental news, call the Washington Connection 24/7 at 1-800-424-8666 or read it online. Listen to ACB reports by downloading the MP3 file from www.acb.org or call 518-906-1820 and choose option 8. Tune in to ACB Media at www.acbmedia.org or by calling 518-906-1820. Learn more about us at www.acb.org. Follow us on Twitter at ACB National or like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/ACBNATIONAL. Copyright 2024, American Council of the Blind. Scott Thornhill, Executive Director. Sharon Lovering, Editor. 225 Reinecker's Lane, Suite 660, Alexandria, Virginia, 22314. Table of Contents. President's Message by Deb Cook Lewis. Jacksonville Convention Snippets by Janet Dickelman. Seeking Volunteers for the 2024 Information Desk by Cecily Laney Nipper. Summary of the January 30, 2024 Board Meeting by Penny Reeder. Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, AAVL, Working for the Futures of Us All by Doug Powell, President. How to Start an AAVL Affiliate in Your State by Frank Welty. You're Not Old Unless You Think You're Old by Larry Johnson. Thoughts on Losing Sight Later in Life by Sandy Troiano. When Your Adaptive Skills Take a Hit as You Age by Deanna Quietwater Noriega. Adapting Games in Braille, a Do-It-Yourself Guide by Andrew Smith. Recent Books About Blindness and Vision Loss by Doug Powell. A Sacramento Success Story by Jeff and Leslie Tom. Expertise by Nancy Scott. What Her Bones Know by Deanna Quietwater Noriega. Here and There, edited by Cynthia G. Hawkins. Upcoming forum themes and deadlines. July-August 2024, pre-convention issue. Deadline, May 24, 2024. September 2024, theme TBA. Deadline, July 26, 2024. October 2024, theme TBA. Deadline, August 23, 2024. How to submit articles to the forum. If you wish to submit an article to the ACB Braille Forum, please send it via email to sloving@acb.org as part of the message or attached as a Word or ASCII text file. Articles should be between 500 and 800 words. Language should be family-friendly. Longer articles may be divided into two or more parts. Are you moving? Do you want to change your subscription? Contact Sharon Lovering in the ACB National Office, 1-800-424-8666 or via email, sloving@acb.org. Give her the information and she'll make the changes for you. President's Message: Are You Really As Old As You Feel? By Deb Cook Lewis. My family has the inherited characteristic of living long and with pretty good health. While I don't expect to reduce the odds on this, I must admit that major surgery and recovery has been more daunting than I expected at age 70, and has helped me see the urgency of our advocacy in ACB related to medical services and devices. This past November, I had hip replacement surgery resulting from a childhood encounter with a truck. I was always told I was not a candidate for surgery because of extensive pelvic damage. So when I began to experience major pain and functional limitations last spring, I wasn't feeling too hopeful. Fortunately, medical techniques are always advancing, and I was suddenly a good candidate for robotic surgery, which would replace the hip and make some systemic changes to my pelvis itself. Think of it as a pelvic redesign. Well, you know how these things go. It was advertised as a day surgery. I left the hospital 6 days later. They wanted me to go directly home and have outpatient physical therapy. I insisted on going to inpatient rehab, which was to be 3 weeks. And you guessed it, this was 6 weeks. But wait, there's more. My incision wasn't healing properly, which necessitated a referral to home health. I learned when this happens, you lose all access to external physical therapy, etc., which means that you start all over with your relationships. It will be about 9 more months before I'm fully recovered, but I was medically released in time to attend the ACB Leadership Conference, for which I'm truly grateful. Along my journey, I had plenty of time to think about the implications of aging with disabilities and the likely acquisition of new ones. My medical providers used several online portals, which are almost entirely inaccessible. None of the systems talked to each other, and it was up to me to make sure my providers were not in conflict, something that became an issue several times. Stacks of print mail that did not lend itself well to OCR also became the order of the day. 30% of the individuals living in long-term care at the rehab and nursing facility where I stayed were experiencing significant vision loss, without any sign of older blind program services from any of the 3 states these residents came from. Even periodic in-service training for staff could make a significant difference in accessibility of programs and services. Most of the staff who served me on my journey were terrific, caring people, but every provider was woefully understaffed for a host of reasons. ACB will most certainly not be engaged in repairing our medical system, but we must continue to focus on our priorities related to a more accessible world for people with blindness and vision loss. To this end, we must continue to advocate for our legislative imperatives and take other opportunities to encourage systemic change in service delivery to the growing population of older Americans with vision loss. Jacksonville Convention Snippets by Janet Tickleman. What an exciting time to be involved with the American Council of the Blind. Our 63rd annual conference and convention is fast approaching. In-person convention dates are July 5th through July 12th in Jacksonville, Florida. We are thrilled to be collaborating with the Blind Veterans Association. We will share the exhibit hall and opening general session, and members from both groups are welcome to attend each other's events. During the in-person portion of the conference, some of our sessions will be hybrid. They will be available via Zoom and broadcast on ACB Media. We will also hold Zoom-only sessions and in-person-only sessions that will be available as podcasts. In addition to the in-person conference days, there is so much more that will be available via the Zoom platform and ACB Media. Learn about candidates running for board positions at the Candidates Forum on Wednesday, June 19. Don't miss the ACB Virtual Summer Auction on Saturday, June 22 at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, preceded by 2 days of appetizer auction items. The convention will officially open virtually on ACB Media and the Zoom platform on June 24th with the reading of the convention standing rules and the first credentials report, followed by the nominating committee session. Beginning on June 27, we will offer 3 days of Zoom-only sessions for special interest affiliates, ACB committees, and our business partners. These sessions will be part of the convention and will be listed on the convention registration form and the convention program and announced via telephone and on ACB Media. The Zoom-only sessions will also be broadcast on ACB Media. Those evenings will be dedicated to resolutions and bylaws. More information about those sessions will be forthcoming from the pertinent committees. The Florida Host Committee has two outstanding events planned in person in Jacksonville. Friday, July 5, 8 to 11 p.m., Welcome to Jacksonville, $15 and $20. The Sunshine State eagerly awaits your arrival as we prepare to greet you with smiling faces and sandy beaches. Kicking our convention off with a blast as we hit it out of the park in true Florida style with a welcome party to remember that includes sports trivia and karaoke. Hands down, we've leveled the playing field so that we can all participate. Once you've registered for the welcome party, the ball is in your court to represent your favorite team. Florida invites you to party with us because it's going to be all about sports on Friday, July 5th from 8 to 11 p.m. No matter the sport or team, a win is a win. See you there. Thursday, July 11, Bon Voyage Party, $10, $15. After hearing our phenomenal banquet speaker and finding out who received this year's ACB Awards and won the Braille Forum raffle drawing, join FCB for their Bon Voyage Party. With the setting of the sun and the closing of the last session, we reflect on the days and moments well spent with each of you at this year's convention, bidding you safe travels back to your home until we meet again, as we round the corner to another great occasion and set sail to embark on the next journey. Join us for a Bon Voyage party that is sure to have you cruising along for some much-needed fun, hugs, and laughter to carry throughout your return trip. Begin your Zoom convention experience with a Jacksonville historical presentation by Alan J. Bliss, Chief Executive Officer of the Jacksonville Historical Society, on Thursday, June 27 at 9:30 a.m. Dr. Bliss holds a Ph.D. from the University of Florida. His research on modern Florida has won professional awards. Since 2006, Bliss has taught at the University of North Florida. His U.S. history courses include urban history, maritime history, the Great Depression and the New Deal, civil rights, and a seminar on public history, all emphasizing Jacksonville. Conference and convention registration will remain open through June 17th, so don't delay. Register and make your hotel reservations today. For all things registration, visit the April edition of the ACB Braille Forum. Bring the kids. We have great activities for our kids' club, ages 5 to 13. Our wonderful leaders will have craft projects, swimming, and a daily field trip. Check the convention registration form for all the details. Hotel details. Room rates at the hotel are $99 per night, single or double occupancy, $124 triple occupancy, $149 quadruple occupancy. The cost of a king room is $109 per night. Room tax is 14.64%. To ensure you receive the convention rate, you must make your reservations prior to June 14, 2024. Upon check-in, a charge of $40 per night for incidentals will be charged to your credit or debit card. To make reservations online, go to tinyurl.com/2TU9VP5M. If you prefer to make reservations by phone, call 800-233-1234 and use code G-ACOB. Staying in touch. The convention announce list will be filled with information. If you received updates for the 2023 convention, you do not need to resubscribe. If you are not subscribed to the list, send a blank email to acbconvention+subscribe@acblists.org. acbconvention@acblists.org. Seeking Volunteers for the 2024 Information Desk by Cecily Laney Nipper. The ACB Information Desk needs you to help distribute and share news and materials in Jacksonville. The Information Desk will open when registration opens on Thursday, July 4, and will remain open daily from 7:30 a.m. until 6:30 p.m. until the afternoon of Thursday, July 11. We need volunteers to help out every day. Info Desk workers answer attendees' questions. distribute Braille and large print newspapers, hotel and local business information, menus and other materials, collect door prizes, help organize reservations for banquet tables, and help get lost items back to their owners. If you enjoy meeting people, being at the center of things, and can multitask, consider volunteering to work at the 2024 Info Desk. Join the Info Desk team. You can choose to work one day or every day, 2 hours or 4 hours, morning or afternoon. If you are interested in helping out, contact me at roses@comcast.net or via phone or text at 470-218-7885 by June 4 with your name and telephone number, and I'll reach out to find out what day or days are best for you to volunteer behind the desk.
Summary of the January 30, 2024 Board Meeting by Penny Reeder. President Deb Lewis called the January 30 meeting of the ACB Board of Directors to order at 7 p.m. Eastern. To hear the podcast of the meeting, visit tiny4hbu3hw. All board members were present except Doug Powell, who was excused, and Kim Charlson, who arrived midway through the meeting. Staff members in attendance included Interim Executive Director Dan Spoon, CFO Nancy Marks Becker, and Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs Claire Stanley. Deb asked for board approval of the agenda. It was approved with one negative vote from Gabriel Lopez Cafati. Minutes from the two most recent board meetings were approved. Deb and Dan celebrated the meeting's mission moment, expressing their sincere appreciation for the ACB staff, all of whom had been working extra hours and taken on additional responsibilities since the departures of Kelly Gask and Clark Rockfall. Dan highlighted a number of the staff's achievements, requiring them to work far harder than what would be considered reasonable in even the busiest work environment. Dan outlined plans for the upcoming leadership conference and officially welcomed Claire Stanley as ACB's Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. Next, Deb explained why she was asking the board to make a decision regarding the advisability of holding a tour to the Kingsley Plantation during the 2024 ACB convention. She believes that controversies surrounding the advisability of holding the tour arose from inadequate communication between all parties. Deb based her decision on the long-established precedent of identifying the convention committee as the entity responsible for selecting and planning convention tours. After the decision was made, controversy regarding the appropriateness of the plantation as a tour venue increased, and since the responsibility for making decisions regarding ACB ultimately rests with the board, she decided to ask the board to accept her decision to go forward with the tour or reverse the decision and cancel the tour. The Kingsley Plantation is a National Park Service NPS tour venue. ACB has offered a recorded tour of this venue as one of the virtual tours that were made available over the last couple of years. Deb invited Cheryl Cummings, chair of the Multicultural Affairs Committee, MCAC, to share that committee's recommendation with respect to the tour. Cheryl said after Janet Dickelman brought the proposed tour to her attention and asked for her opinion, she convened a meeting of the MCAC. She also reached out to African Americans who live in Florida to get their input. The majority felt ACB should not sponsor the tour. The MCAC felt that the plantation tour would raise too much controversy, she said, and that controversy would be something that ACB could easily avoid simply by not holding the plantation tour. Following Cheryl's remarks, Director Chris Bell made a motion that ACB withdraw the Kingsley Plantation tour from the convention. Gabriel seconded the motion. Much discussion ensued. The motion carried with 8 votes in favor, 7 against, and 1 abstention. The next issue on the agenda was the president's request for the board to confirm ACB's mission and affirm ACB's policy with respect to members, committees, and affiliates' rights and responsibilities. Deb explained, that two ACB committees were discussing whether to support a rally which Blind Pride International, BPI, planned to hold during the ACB convention, which prompted this discussion. ACB learned about BPI's proposed rally at the August 2023 board meeting. At that meeting, Gabriel told the board that BPI planned to hold a rally in Jacksonville during the convention. Deb said BPI's intention to hold the rally was not a concern at the time. She became concerned about the implications for ACB when she learned the MCAC and Women's Concerns Committees were considering supporting the rally. Deb believes the purpose of the BPI rally falls outside of ACB's stated mission. She believes ACB's committees, whose members are appointed by the president and who do not have the autonomous status of ACB affiliates, cannot officially speak on behalf of ACB. Deb stated if ACB committees were to endorse or attend an event, it was her understanding that would immediately make ACB a co-sponsor of that event. Deb asked the board to consider two motions. The first would be to confirm ACB's policies with respect to our mission and its meaning, and the rights and responsibilities of members, committees, and affiliates. David Trott introduced the first motion, which asks the ACB Board of Directors to affirm that ACB's sole mission and purpose continues to be to increase the independence, security, equality of opportunity, and to improve the quality of life for all blind and visually impaired people. That ACB's prohibited conduct policy provides the expectation that ACB will respect individuals' differences and views as ACB joins together for the common goals of assuring opportunities for blind and low-vision people, and further, that ACB's elected officers, staff, appointed committees, and individual members are prohibited from taking a position on behalf of the organization unless ACB has taken such a position through its board of directors or vote of the membership. The motion also affirms that ACB includes both geographic and special interest affiliates, who are independent entities with individual purposes and missions, while they are advocating for equity of people who are blind, and that ACB's affiliates have additional concerns that also shape their mission, philosophical positions, decision-making, and activities. And anyone may align themselves with these activities as individuals, but not representing the American Council of the Blind. Connie Sims seconded the motion. Deb invited Leah Gardner, BPI president, Linda Perrell, and Lori Scharf, co-chairs of the ACB Women's Concerns Committee, and Multicultural Affairs Committee Chair Cheryl Cummings regarding both motions. Leah spoke about how much it meant to her as a young blind teenager to discover an organization advocating for her civil rights, and how important it was to her when she attended her first convention in 1999 to find a group of ACB members who were also supporting people who were members of the LGBTQ+ community. Linda said she was encouraged by the board's vote to cancel the plantation tour. Cheryl said she has a better understanding how the president, board, and executive director want ACB's committees to operate. She understands that if a committee associated with the organization puts its name to something, then that committee cannot jeopardize the nonprofit status of the organization, nor can it commit the organization to a position that it does not want to take. Discussion followed. Kim Charlson said, "I think that our mission needs to become a 21st century mission. It carried us for the last 60-plus years, and it's fundamentally a sound mission. But it won't hurt for us to take a look at it through a 21st century lens so that in the future it can make it possible for us to be a more diverse and inclusive organization, and I hope that we can figure out a pathway to make that possible in the future." Deb stated the motion affirms the current mission, the independent status of affiliates, and that members, including committees, cannot take a position where ACB has not spoken. The motion carried, with 12 yes votes and 2 no's. Cecily Nipper moved that ACB take no position on the BPI rally. Connie seconded the motion. Leah said BPI's convention co-chairs, Anthony Corona and Gabriel Lopez Cafati, met with the Director of Diversity and Equity in Jacksonville and reported on that meeting to President Lewis. They worked with convention coordinator Janet Dickelman on the rally schedule. BPI would like as many people as possible to attend the rally. They are in talks with speakers from the Human Rights Campaign and various minority and disability rights organizations. They also approached ACB committees whom they felt would be deeply affected by the current environment in Florida. Cheryl said the MCAC carefully considered whether they should support the BPI rally. As the committee that is charged with increasing awareness of human rights and working to improve understanding within ACB, we thought that our agreement to participate in this rally was a fulfillment of our mission as a committee. Secretary Denise Cawley commented, "I'm just really feeling torn because I believe in the rally. I believe in the purpose for it. Kudos for BPI for wanting to do this. I fully understand why ACB Women and MCAC want to participate as committees. The problem is, if we vote to support it, that means we have to take an active role. And because the board has a fiduciary responsibility in terms of our finances and resources, we would have to do things that we had not initially been a part of an agreement to do. That is the only reason I would not vote in favor of this motion." Michael Garrett added, "If we were to do something that would jeopardize our reputation or our 501c3 status or our relationships with partners, we could put ourselves in a tailspin." Gabriel Lopez Cafati stated, "At the August 15, 2023 meeting, I came before this board and the people who elected me to serve on this board, and as a spokesperson for BPI, I said that we would support coming to Jacksonville, and as a token of faith, BPI would offer a peaceful demonstration that would be educational and transparent in terms of telling Florida, we're here. We want to defend the rights of those of us who are LGBTQ+ and blind. We want to defend the rights of blind women and blind African Americans." Leah reminded everyone that BPI has never asked ACB to put any resources into the rally. She explained that they asked the MCAC and Women's Concerns Committees for their support with respect to locating speakers and sharing information with various minority groups, with the goal of making the rally as inclusive as possible. BPI is simply planning to gather people and speakers together to talk about the human rights issues that are going on in Florida, with the goal of helping everybody to feel safe, included, and heard, including all people who are blind who experience their lives within a minority status. The motion was adopted with one no vote. The meeting adjourned at 11:33 p.m. Eastern. Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, AAVL. Working for the Futures of Us All. By Doug Powell, President. As most of you know, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss is a special interest affiliate of ACB, focusing on the concerns of older people who are blind or who are losing vision. We are hard at work advocating for our needs this year as the Older Americans Act, OAA, comes up for reauthorization. In March, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, HELP, named an 8-member bipartisan subcommittee to work on the reauthorization that is due by September 30. Several of us listened to the first hearing of this subcommittee, and were concerned that the deplorable plight of members of our community was not mentioned. Anicio Correa, Larry Johnson, Jeff Tom, Chris Rogers from our partners at the Aging and Vision Loss National Coalition, AVLNC, and I wrote the letter below to the OAA subcommittee. We may be calling on you to support our cause as the reauthorization moves through Congress. Thank you in advance for helping us support all our futures, as well as all of those other older blind and low-vision citizens whose needs are not currently being met. One way you can follow what's happening is to go to our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org. and sign up on our AAVLL email list. Honorable Senators, I attended your hearing on the Older Americans Act a few days ago and was dismayed that heart disease, diabetes, and Alzheimer's were mentioned, but not issues for older people who are blind, low vision, deaf, and hard of hearing or deaf-blind. In some ways, the lack of recognition at the hearing and in the Act of the plight of older people who have lost or who are losing sight, hearing, or both makes the need for my request obvious. Medicare and census data indicate that older people with vision loss report a higher prevalence of chronic health conditions. 19% of visually impaired individuals report having had a stroke, versus just 7% of those without visual impairment. 43% versus 25% report having diabetes. 26% versus 15% report having depression. And 49% versus 30% report having had a fall in the past year. Access to good nutrition and fall prevention programs, along with health information and the opportunity for socialization, will help prevent poorer health among blind, low-vision, and deaf-blind people and promote their independence, as it has been shown to, in other senior populations. Moreover, seniors with vision loss are disproportionately low-income, less educated, and are more likely to be members of underserved minority populations. Finally, the failure to mention vision rehabilitation services at both the hearing and in the OAA, the provision of which enables greater independence and promotes aging in place among people who are blind, low vision, or deafblind, perpetuates an important gap in service delivery for this population. As you well know, area agencies on aging provide many useful programs and services for older Americans, such as Meals on Wheels, Senior Companion, home weatherization, benefit counseling, fall prevention, and nutrition classes. They benefit many millions of seniors. However, those who are blind, low vision, or deafblind are often left out. Our informal survey of approximately 25 randomly selected AAAs from around the country show us that there is no specific outreach by AAAs to seniors who are losing or have lost their vision and/or hearing to let them know about the programs and services. No initiative by AAA staff to make information available to our community in accessible formats to explain how they can apply. Not even the assessments used in determining eligibility are geared toward the unique daily living skills that blind, low vision, or hearing impaired citizens need to have to continue to live independently in the community. We commented on our vastly underserved status during the recent rulemaking process of the Older Americans Act. Those who promulgated the new rule decided that mentioning severely disabled would be enough. We do not believe that this term will raise the awareness of the plight of blind, low vision, and deaf-blind to the level where change will happen. We are therefore requesting that you amend the OAA to explicitly include and recognize older Americans with vision and hearing loss as a distinct, important, and vastly underserved segment of the senior population, which has unique and specialized needs that should be directly addressed through initiatives by local area agencies on aging. Thank you for considering this request. How to Start an AAVL Affiliate in Your State, by Frank Welty. The Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss is engaged in a long-term, nationwide campaign to build a thriving community of older blind adults and to reform the service delivery system and other systems impacting us. These efforts must take place simultaneously at the national, state, and local levels. Indeed, what we do in our local communities, in our counties, and in our state capitals may be more important than what we do in Washington, D.C. That's why we need to organize an AAVL affiliate in every state. Each of us needs to take ownership for starting and building our state AAVL affiliate, but none of us have to do it alone. We've done it in California and in Oregon. You can do it too. Here's how. 1. Decide right now that you're going to take part in starting your state's AAVL affiliate. There's no need to wait around for someone else to get the ball rolling. Just finish reading this article and then go right to work. Don't worry about duplicating someone else's efforts. You'll find out about each other soon enough, and then you can start collaborating. 2. Make a list of other people in your state who may be interested in starting your group or in joining it once it's up and running. If there's someone you aren't sure about, add them to your list. While you will need at least 10 people to get your group affiliated with AAVL, there's no minimum number for starting the process. The list will grow as you continue your activities. 3. Now call or write to each person on your list. Tell them something about AAVL and our mission, and invite them to join your organizing effort. 4. Once you've received a positive response from a few people, schedule and publicize a conference call or Zoom meeting where interested people can get better acquainted, express their concerns as older, blind, or visually impaired adults, and discuss ideas for starting your state's AAVL group. This will be an informal call. The goal of this call is to share information and to identify the people who are willing to serve on a steering committee. 5. After the call, spread the word that a committee is being formed to set up your state's AAVL organization. Schedule your first formal steering committee meeting. Notify AAVL leadership and your state affiliates' leadership about your activities, and invite them to help. 6. At your first steering committee meeting, you'll start by selecting a meeting chair and a note taker. Then you will elect your steering committee chairperson, vice chair, and secretary, and you will invite others to join the committee. The size of your steering committee is up to you. Finish the meeting by assigning tasks and setting a schedule for your regular committee meetings. 7. Once your steering committee is up and running, the committee will need to work on the following tasks, as well as others specific to your circumstances. Pick a name for the group. I recommend Your State Name, Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss. Gather contact information for potential group members and other interested people. This list will become your member roster when the group is formally established. You'll need the following information for each person: name, home or mailing address, preferred telephone number, preferred email address, vision status, blind, visually impaired, or sighted, reading media preference, email, audio, braille, or large print. You can also collect information about the gender and racial identity of those who wish to share this information. Set up a means for your group to communicate with each other, an email list, a Facebook group, a telephone tree, etc. Set up a phone number and an email address where people can contact your group. This can be someone's personal phone number or email address, or a separate phone number and email address, such as a Gmail account and a Google Voice phone number. Draft your group's bylaws. Begin publicizing your group through email list and Facebook group postings, articles to appropriate newsletters, and through word of mouth. Contact AAVL and your state's ACB affiliate to find out what their requirements are for affiliation. At the time the California Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss was established, we needed to submit our bylaws, our member roster, and our affiliate dues to the respective organizations prior to receiving our formal affiliation. 8. As you work on the tasks listed above, you will decide it's time to schedule your first organizational meeting. This is the point at which your steering committee will be transformed into a formal organization. First, you will adopt your bylaws. Then you will hold elections for your officers and directors. Then you will conduct other business, such as setting up committees, authorizing your treasurer to open a bank account for the group. Adopting a formal motion to affiliate with AAVL and with your state's ACB affiliate, etc. 9. Once your organization is established, you'll have some more tasks to do. Select your organization's mailing address. This could be someone's personal mailing address, or it could be a P.O. box or other type of mailbox. Open your organization's checking account. This is probably the most difficult task you'll need to do during the first year. Don't be surprised if your bank takes several months to approve your account application. The days are past when you could stroll into a bank branch with your photo ID and a checkbook in your purse and then walk out a half hour later with your new checkbook. You'll probably need to schedule an appointment with your banker, and your bank will need certain information from your organization to open the account, such as a signed copy of your organizational meeting minutes, including a motion authorizing the opening of a bank account and specifying who will be authorized to make deposits and sign checks, a copy of your bylaws, a copy of your state ACB affiliate's IRS letter of tax exemption, and a document certifying that your state ACB affiliate is authorizing your group to operate under its tax exemption, the initial deposit for the account, and other things that the government or your bank's management may decide they need. Until your bank account is opened, you'll probably need to authorize your treasurer to use a personal account to deposit dues and to make payments on behalf of the organization. Sign up members and collect dues. Activate committees. Start projects. Publicize the organization. Start a newsletter. Apply for affiliation with AAVL and with your state's ACB affiliate. While this list of meetings and tasks may seem overwhelming, remember that you don't have to do everything at once, and you don't have to do it alone. Those of us who have been through the process can assist you. I am willing to share copies of the CAAVL Constitution and bylaws and other documents that you can use as models. Write to me at frank.a.welte@gmail.com or call me at 510-541-1442. You're not old unless you think you're old. By Larry Johnson. There's a lot of talk going around in the media these days about age. When are we too old to work, to play, to contribute our ideas, our talents, our advice? It used to be that societies respected their elders and turned to them for guidance and direction. But nowadays, there seems to be a growing tendency to want to question the competence or mental health of some of our prominent public figures because of their age. I'm not saying that all old people are fully capable, physically or mentally, for every job. I sure wouldn't qualify or want to be a Super Bowl quarterback. But I'm still able to work on my computer, write articles, conduct meetings, and manage my checkbook. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that older Americans will account for 57% of the country's labor force growth in the coming decade. The share of older Americans who are working, by choice or necessity, has doubled in the past 35 years, according to a report released last month by the Pew Research Center. At 77, John Van Horn works 40 to 50 hours a week as editor and publisher of a small parking industry magazine and has no plans of slowing down. Wilmer Jensen is still a practicing attorney in Modesto, California. He turned 95 in December and has no plans of stopping. Louise Aronson, geriatrician and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, says some of the assumptions that underpin arguments against older workers include the idea that they are slower and more expensive than younger workers. She argues that there are huge benefits to having people with different skill sets and of varying ages. We know that older people are more likely to make the right decision when presented with information, she says. They are more likely to have emotional intelligence. At 84, Seattle therapist Nina Schilling isn't planning on retiring anytime soon. As long as people want to come to see me, I'll keep working, she says. Italian-born fashion designer Pierre Cardin continued to work until age 98. Angela Lansbury, British actress with over 100 television and film appearances and 4 Tony Awards, continued working until her death at 96. And Queen Elizabeth II lived an active life to age 96 as well. Perhaps most startling is that workers age 75 and older are the fastest growing group in the workforce, according to Pew's analysis. In her book, This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, Ashton Applewhite writes, "Ageism is prejudice toward people based on their age. It's not about how we look, it's about how people treat us." They discount older persons as over the hill, old-fashioned, and relegate them to less meaningful jobs. American culture is youth-centered, she pointed out. There are many prejudices related to aging. Older people are too slow, forgetful, more likely to get sick or have a fall. However, excluding older people from decision-making robs society of an immense amount of knowledge and experience. Some people are already old when they turn 35, while others at age 90 are still vibrant and alive. Aging doesn't happen overnight. You don't suddenly wake up and have graying hair and wrinkles under your eyes. It's a long process. Likewise is the acquisition of knowledge, patience, and experience. It takes time. Accepting our age and that of others paves the way to acknowledging it as an accomplishment to be claimed with pride. To borrow and slightly alter a famous quote by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., "Let us not judge other people by the number of years that they have lived, but rather by their talents, their experience, and the content of their character."
Thoughts on Losing Sight Later in Life by Sandy Troiano. Editor's note: Sandy facilitates a community event called The Ins and Outs of Sight Loss Later in Life on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern. End of note. I am totally blind. I have no light perception and cannot tell if it is day or night. I join the blindest of the blind. It wasn't always this way. I lost all my sight close to 15 years ago when I was 55. I am completely used to being blind now and most of the time don't think about it. My mind focused on other things. In short, I am okay with my blindness. I wasn't always so sanguine about it. In fact, as I kept losing sight, I felt a combination of anxiety, frustration, and loss. Let me explain some of those feelings I can still recall and, perhaps because I am at a distance from them, understand even better in retrospect. It is important for seniors losing sight or people trying to help those who are to recognize these psychological issues as they seek to progress on this journey. A major concern of some persons who experience sight loss at an older age is the potential loss of identity. Will I no longer be viewed as myself and instead gradually be viewed as the blind person? Will my family and friends wonder how much assistance they will need to give me, whether they can continue to enjoy certain activities with me, or whether I will become their burden? As I lost sight, one of my friends began concentrating on pointing out every obstacle in my path, despite my assurance my cane would find them. This killed any chance of discussing other things. Another friend mused on whether we could find any activities to do together as she focused on the visual aspects of entertainment. I know people who have avoided using a cane or paratransit precisely due to this fear, as if they could hide their vision loss as they stumble along. This is not due to vanity or a sense that blind people are less worthy, as some might assume, but rather as a consequence of the fear that one's individual identity will be lost as one morphs into that blind person. Another concern of the elder newly blind is the loss of privacy. Before sight loss, that person could go to a store and purchase whatever he or she needed in total privacy or anonymity. Now, unless the person chooses to ask a store employee for assistance, which can have mixed results, or to make purchases online, again with mixed results and some timing issues, he or she must rely on a family member, friend, or aide to find needed items. While this may not sound like a major issue, it is a notable invasion of privacy that can be quite disconcerting. Also, the person was used to walking lost in the crowd, but now, as he or she stumbles or tries using a cane, many people may offer assistance. This is, of course, generous of them and can be quite helpful or needed, but it shows clearly that one is now under observation and that sense of privacy or anonymity is gone, probably for good. This is especially hard to accept if the help giver crosses the line between providing assistance and becoming patronizing. Finally, I would note that people losing sight at an older age want to make as few changes in their lives as possible. Obviously, they will cling to what little vision they may have, even if an audible screen reader and white cane could make their lives easier and safer. They will want to learn new methods slowly over time, grasping only what new steps they must take when the need becomes overwhelming. To push them to adapt to new techniques and technologies before they are psychologically ready to do so will likely lead to great frustration and backfire. It will be easier for seniors facing substantial vision loss or blindness to deal with all that this entails if they interact with people who have already gone through this. Most governmental agencies and nonprofit organizations that offer vision loss training do not address the foregoing issues nor assist seniors with social, cultural, recreational, or entertainment activities. As I lost sight, I was fortunate to join a team of blind and visually impaired dragon boaters. While my impetus was simply to get on the water, the major benefit to me was to be with a group of blind and substantially low vision persons who did not focus on sight loss, but instead on how fast they could propel the boat. Taking the focus off vision allowed me to release some of my anxiety about it and see that its lack does not curtail many activities. By observing how my cohorts asked for help with dignity when they needed it and proceeded on their own when they did not, I realized that I could do this too. The training offered by the governmental agencies and nonprofit organizations is definitely necessary to continue life with some independence, but the opportunity to be with people who have faced the same challenges and interact while focusing on matters other than vision loss will help relieve some of the psychological issues that accompany it. The anxiety will lessen over time as the seniors begin to see that sight loss is a livable condition that they can manage quite well, especially if they are able to do so on their own terms. Eventually, they, too, will no longer concentrate on the blindness and let their minds focus on other things. During the vision loss transition period, however, they will have to deal with emotional issues that differ from those that people who have been blind for most or all of their lives have faced. These seniors will fare better if support can be provided for their unique psychological concerns. When your adaptive skills take a hit as you age. By Deanna Quietwater Noriega. As a child, I had a brave mother. She never tried to prevent me from climbing trees, running, jumping, or participating in the activities typical of childhood. As a result, I developed excellent echolocation, balance, and coordination. These assets made it easier for me to orient, mental map, and adjust to changes beneath my feet. I seldom fell, walked into things, or got lost as I moved around my public school, neighborhood, and learned new places quickly. Now that I have become a golden girl of 75 years, I am having to adapt to decreased stamina, a slight hearing loss that makes my once excellent echolocation skill less reliable. The onset of vertigo 4 years ago means I have to judge how much I can get done in a day and when I need to slow down and prioritize my time better. Additional health concerns like arthritic knees and a loss of 3 inches in height make doing ordinary tasks more difficult. If I push myself beyond these new limitations, I am likely to become too distracted by maintaining my balance to trust my orientation. I veer, stumble, and worst of all, get lost. My memory can fail me if I don't use my skill with computer command structures or forget that a certain street crossing is complicated by oddities in street or curb cut locations. I have to be sure I have earbuds or headsets charged that allow me to hear traffic to use GPS apps. As a wife, guide dog user, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, writer, and Zoom host for ACB, I have to be careful to blend tasks that are necessary, but leave enough time to do things that help me stay healthy in mind, body, and spirit. To cope with the changes brought on by aging, I slow down as the day takes a toll on my energy. Keeping a calendar of medical appointments and personal care activities is useful for better time management. Adjusting to my new reality can pose challenges, but I have had a lifetime to develop coping techniques that make my life the best it can be. Working smarter, not harder, is still a tool that I use to figure out solutions to conquer new stumbling blocks. It isn't what we lack in life, but what we do with the things we have that determines the quality of our lives. Adapting Games in Braille, a Do-It-Yourself Guide by Andrew Smith. Oftentimes, I am asked how a blind person can play a board game or a card game. Certainly, you can purchase some of these games, such as Monopoly, Uno, Connect Four, Chess, Checkers, Scrabble, or a standard 52-card deck in Braille from Independent Living Aids, Maxi Aids, Future Aids, 64-ounce Games, Amazon, and the like. Although they are already accessibly purchased in this way, many of these games tend to be quite costly due to the small market. If you know Braille and don't mind putting in a bit of work, you can adapt a standard, store-bought game and make it fully accessible for all to play. For games where color is important, such as chess, bump dots are a good option. Simply put a bump dot on a certain color, for instance, and leave the other pieces empty. For card games, a Braille label maker with Dymo tape, a Braille writer, or a slate and stylus could be used to create individual labels for the Braille cards. Because Braille is larger than print, the labels may need to be modified slightly in order for the Braille to fit entirely on the cards. For board games, Velcro on the board itself and on the bottom of each game piece will prevent the pieces from sliding around as a blind player examines the pieces. Wiki sticks are also a good option for this. Various blindness-specific stores sell material for adapting games. MaxiAids.com and IndependentLiving.com are terrific places for purchasing Braille label makers, bump dots, wiki sticks, and just about everything else mentioned. To adapt games, sighted help is, of course, initially required. If you live alone, I highly recommend using apps. Be My Eyes and Seeing AI are excellent for this task. And because they're free, fully accessible, and available on both Android and iOS, including the Blind Shell phone, they are available for the majority of blind people. I highly encourage adapting games in this fashion. It can be less expensive, more fun, and improve your Braille skills and creative thinking. Recent Books About Blindness and Vision Loss by Doug Powell. If you haven't noticed, there have been a few relatively new books on the subject of blindness and vision loss that have emerged somewhat recently, and I thought I would put them together for readers to choose any or all of them to read. I have personally only read one so far, but am planning on reading the others soon. If you read one, why not share your comments on the ACB conversation list? When You Can't Believe Your Eyes, Vision Loss and Personal Recovery, DBC 11619, by Hannah Fairbairn. With a special emphasis on the challenges faced by seniors with failing vision, this highly practical how-to focuses on practical, social, and personal recovery for adults who are losing their sight. The Country of the Blind, A Memoir at the End of Sight, DB115575 by Andrew Leland. Reading time, 7 hours, 51 minutes. We meet Andrew Leland as he's suspended in the liminal state of the soon-to-be blind. He's midway through his life with retinitis pigmentosa, a condition that ushers those who live with it from sightedness to blindness over years, even decades. He grew up with full vision, but starting in his teenage years, his sight began to degrade from the outside in, such that he now sees the world as if through a narrow tube. Soon, but without knowing exactly when, he will likely have no vision left. Full of apprehension but also dogged curiosity, Leland embarks on a sweeping exploration of the state of being that awaits him, not only the physical experience of blindness, but also its language, politics, and customs. He negotiates his changing relationships with his wife and son and with his own sense of self as he moves from his mainstream, typical life to one with a disability. Part memoir, part historical and cultural investigation, The Country of the Blind represents Leland's determination not to merely survive this transition, but to grow from it, to seek out and revel in that which makes blindness enlightening. Thought-provoking and brimming with warmth and humor, The Country of the Blind is a deeply personal and intellectually exhilarating tour of a way of being that most of us have never paused to consider, and from which we have much to learn. What Every Blind Person Needs You to Know, a handbook for friends, family, and colleagues of the visually impaired. DB116332 by Leanne Hunt. Reading time, 3 hours, 54 minutes. Written by someone who has walked the path of deteriorating eyesight and worked as a qualified crisis counselor, this handbook is designed to show families, friends, and colleagues of the visually impaired how to offer support without being patronizing. For many people with sight loss, the real problems aren't about mobility and access to information. Technology and training can cover these bases, and once a certain degree of competence has been reached, there are ample opportunities for independent exploration. The real problem that comes with being sight impaired in the 21st century has to do with convincing others that few things are out of reach. Blind people have dreams as big as sighted people, and if they have the determination and courage to pursue those dreams, why stop them? If you or someone you know has been worried about helping a blind companion cope, this book may radically change your outlook. Prepare to be surprised, challenged, and even inspired as you consider what new paths might open up as you adopt a fresh approach. Blurred Vision by Judith Good Kirby. Available on Amazon in hardcover and Kindle. Note: this Kindle version does not work well with Apple VoiceOver. The Audible and Bard versions are in the making. What is blurred vision? Is it a physical condition, or does it concern matters of the heart? What is the greater loss of vision? Having encountered and dealt with both of these vision challenges for almost 50 years, Judy Kirby confidently shares the value and importance of having spiritual eyes open and aware to God and His beautiful world despite physical vision limitations. See how this legally blind author attempts to make this distinction clear in her 10-year collection of poems, writings, and personally taken photographs. At the early age of 20 and with a full life ahead of her, Judy Kirby was diagnosed with Stargardt's macular degeneration, which eventually made it impossible to see the faces of family and friends. Driving would cease. Her 1970s college degree in computer programming and accounting would not be utilized. Compared to the technology of this 21st century, what was available then would be considered quite archaic. Fortunately, many huge advances have made it possible for Judy Kirby to have devices that talk to her and even enable her to take pictures with her smartphone of people, places, and things she cannot see. After enlarging her photos on a bigger device, she was able to view them and write her God-inspired entries for this book. A Sacramento Success Story by Jeff and Leslie Tom. One of the issues that members of the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, AAVL, have brought to our attention is the often unwelcoming attitude toward people who are blind or low vision when they go to a senior center. This attitude sometimes manifests itself primarily through a lack of willingness to interact with the blind or low vision person. At other times, it reaches the level of outright hostility or discrimination as, for example, when a senior center prohibits a blind person from going on an excursion unless they bring their own assistant. AAVL would like to see these centers do far more to integrate seniors with vision loss into their activities, and we urge our population to advocate at the local level toward that end. However, we need to praise those centers that are doing an excellent job of serving seniors with vision loss. It is for that reason that I write this story about a center in my local area that is doing a truly amazing job for seniors who are blind or have low vision. ACC, as it is known today, was established in 1972 under the name Japanese Community Center and then under the name Asian Community Center. It was founded primarily to meet the social and economic needs of Sacramento's Asian population. Recently, its board of directors changed its name to ACC in order to broaden its focus to all seniors within its service area of the southern part of Sacramento. For many years, ACC has had a skilled nursing facility, numerous types of classes, nutrition, housing, employment, and caregiver programs, and more. ACC's mission is to promote the general welfare and enhance the quality of life for our community by identifying, developing, and providing culturally sensitive health and social services for older adults. During COVID, as a means of ameliorating some of the fear and isolation that was pervading the Asian community due to the outbreak of hate crimes throughout the nation, ACC established an escort program under which volunteers would be matched with residents who wanted to walk in their local areas. Through a connection that my wife and I had with someone who worked with ACC's transportation program, we were urged to approach ACC about linking the blindness community with ACC, and as they say, the rest is history. Our collaboration began with a few of our California Council of the Blind members with vision loss walking with volunteers. It rapidly expanded. I would estimate that more than 24 seniors with vision loss participate in the escort program and other events held by ACC. The center has even partnered with our local Older Individuals Who Are Blind service provider agency to receive training for those engaged in their escort program. Many of us walk at least once a week and have made lasting friendships through the program. ACC has also developed a game day in which people who are blind or have low vision can hone their skills at everything from frisbee to putting to cornhole. Others are learning the ritualized ancient art of using Filipino fighting sticks. Several of us recently attended a Lunar New Year celebration complete with amazing Asian food, music, and dance performances. Now, more of our folks are beginning to participate in their mainstream classes, and ACC is more than pleased that this is happening. As AAVL member Connie Bateman puts it, "I am very grateful that the people at ACC have demonstrated a willingness to learn about what blind and visually impaired people are able to do and have worked with us collaboratively so we can participate fully in their wellness and lifelong learning classes and activities." Martha, an ACC volunteer, says, "As a volunteer with the ACC Escort Program, I've enjoyed the companionship of so many interesting people, and I like sharing our different background and interests. As for me, I look forward to those days that I know I will be walking or engaging in some other ACC activity." Danielle Lee, ACC Lifelong Learning and Wellness Program Manager, sums it up quite well. "Working with members from the American Council of the Blind has been enlightening for us as an organization, but also such a joy to get to know the members. Our story doesn't mean that you will necessarily have the same success. However, try to find someone in your senior center's leadership who really cares about people and see if you can't build a bridge between their center and people with vision loss. Amazing things just may happen."
Expertise by Nancy Scott. A friend recently asked if I thought of myself as an expert editor or writer. I laughed. I am a plotter. Everything takes at least 10 drafts, and much of it makes me wonder if I've learned anything. I have practices of long necessity, advice taken to heart and keyboard, and patterns my ears always hear. And I have the long, obnoxious bio, but I wasn't published until after turning 30. I pack Braille poems for a bookstore open mic, 1 hour of metaphor motivation, and I want to go back for a future reading of Noble Quills. I will don my beyond midlife crisis shoes and an outfit likely too old in safe, neutral colors. I've been writing longer than many of these creative minds have been alive. I might be an expert in survival. This youth craves energetic images that inherit exclusion. There is Chai and several young poets who, when I announce this poem as new, will chorus on cue, "New stuff." I will cut, move, and choose, just to make them chant. Expertise? Desperation? Fun? At 70 or 17, we all want this hope. To find ourselves. To find our tribe. To word will a room. What Her Bones Know by Deanna Quietwater Noriega. The heart of the matter, my lass, is you are growing old. The ballet dancer on second base has danced her last game. Her Lady Godiva chestnut hair has silvered and grown thin. She can still bend down to hug a child. Getting up, though, is hard. She has sold her tandem bicycle, journeys only in books. Her heart is that of a joyful child. Her bones know better. Here and There, edited by Cynthia G. Hawkins. The announcement of products and services in this column does not represent an endorsement by the American Council of the Blind, its officers, or staff. Listings are free of charge for the benefit of our readers. The ACBE Forum cannot be held responsible for the reliability of the products and services mentioned. To submit items for this column, send a message to sloving@acb.org or phone the national office at 1-800-424-8666 and leave a message in Sharon Lovering's mailbox. Information must be received at least 2 months ahead of publication date. Campabilities of the Mid-Atlantic Region. Campabilities programs are educational sports camps for youth with visual impairments. The Mid-Atlantic region of the U.S. offers 4 of these programs that are available low-cost or free. Campabilities Pennsylvania at Westchester University. Overnight camp from May 24 to 27 in Westchester, Pennsylvania, focusing on triathlon. If you have questions, send email to campabilitiespa@gmail.com. Campabilities New Jersey at Rowan University. Overnight camp from July 19 to 21 in Glassboro, New Jersey, focusing on outdoor and adventure sports like rock climbing, canoeing, skateboarding, and orienteering. Questions? Send email to leporestevens@rowan.edu. Campabilities Delaware. Overnight camp from August 4 to 9 in Newark, Delaware, focusing on orientation and mobility skills and exposure to a variety of community physical activities such as hiking, golf, soccer, tennis, swimming, football, lacrosse, and volleyball. Contact campabilitiesdelaware@gmail.com if you have any questions. Campabilities New Jersey at Field of Dreams. Day camp from August 21 to 23, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Toms River, New Jersey, focusing on blind sports and recreational activities like beep kickball, mini golf, basketball, track and field, and soccer. Send email to STEVENS at ROWAN.edu for more information. Candle in the Window Retreat. Candle in the Window will hold its 2024 retreat from Wednesday, September 25 through Sunday, September 29 at the beautiful and friendly Camp Dogwood on Lake Norman, located in Sherrills Ford, North Carolina, not far from Charlotte. DogwoodLakeNorman.org. Our topic, based on the participants' suggestions from our 2023 retreat, is Finding and Nurturing Community. Due to space constraints, the retreat is limited to 20 participants. A $40 deposit, non-refundable, will reserve your spot. All registration fees must be paid in full by August 30, 2024. Electronic payments should be sent to candleinthewindow1@gmail.com via PayPal. CANDLEINTHEWINDOW1@gmail.com. Checks should be made out to Candle in the Window and sent to Carlos Taylor, 925 South Luick Avenue, that's Luick Avenue, Muncie, Indiana, 47302. For more information, contact Carlos Taylor via email. CandleInTheWindow1@gmail.com or by phone 765-208-0882. Navalens at the History Museum on the Square. Mary's Braille Transcribing Services, along with Mary's Braille International, working in partnership with the Legends Project and the National Federation of the Blind Springfield, Missouri chapter, are proud to introduce an innovative award-winning technology system aimed at enhancing accessibility and creating a fully inclusive lifestyle for the blind and visually challenged at any age. Navalens and Navalens GO apps consist of two free mobile phone applications and multicolored QR-style codes, which empower people who are blind or have low vision. This allows them to independently navigate unknown places by translating visual signage into audio messages. The History Museum on the Square is currently participating in a trial project to show the capabilities of Navalens codes. Empower Abilities recently introduced their own trial project. Visit the History Museum on the Square, historymuseumonthesquare.org, and Empower Abilities, empowerabilities.org, for more information. Banna Spring Meeting. The Braille Authority of North America held its annual spring meeting, March 25 to 27, at the American Printing House for the Blind in Louisville, Kentucky. Items on the agenda included a review of formal reports from Banna's technical committees, such as Nemeth, Chemistry, and Tactile Graphics, as well as its general committees and task forces, such as the Banna General Committee on UEB and the Outreach Committee. Banna members will act on recommendations and will issue committee charges when appropriate. Current officers are Chair Jen Goulden, CNIB, Vice Chair Mary Nell McLennan, Association for the Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired, Secretary Amber Percy, National Braille Press, Treasurer Danette Johnson, Hadley, Past Chair Tamara Rory, National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. ACB Officers. President, Deb Cook Lewis. First term, 2025. 1131 Liberty Drive, Clarkston, Washington, 99403. First Vice President, David Trott. First term, 2025. 1018 East Street South, Talladega, Alabama, 35160. Second Vice President, Ray Campbell. First term, 2025. 216 Prestwick Road, Springfield, Illinois, 62702-3330. Secretary, Denise Colley. Final term, 2025. 26131 Travis Brook Drive, Richmond, Texas, 77406-3990. Treasurer, Michael Garrett. First term, 2025. 7806 Chaseway Drive, Missouri City, Texas, 77489-2333. Immediate past president, Kim Charlson. 57 Grandview Avenue, Watertown, Massachusetts, 02472. ACB Board of Directors. Christopher Bell, Pittsboro, North Carolina, first term, 2024. Donna Brown, Romney, West Virginia, first term, 2024. Gabriel Lopez Cafati, Miami Lakes, Florida, first term, 2026. Cecily Laney Nipper, Covington, Georgia, partial term, 2024. Terry Pacheco, Silver Spring, Maryland, first term, 2026. Doug Powell, Falls Church, Virginia, second term, 2024. Rachel Schroeder, Springfield, Illinois, first term, 2026. Kenneth Semyon Sr., Beaumont, Texas, first term, 2024. Connie Sims, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, first term, 2026. Jeff Tom, Sacramento, California, second term, 2026. ACB Board of Publications. Penny Reeder, Chair, Montgomery Village, Maryland, third term, 2025. Jeff Bishop, Tucson, Arizona, partial term, 2024. Cheryl Cummings, Seattle, Washington, second term, 2025. Zelda Gebhard, Edgley, North Dakota, second term, 2024. Cachet Wells, Jacksonville, Florida, first term, 2024. Accessing your ACB Braille and eForums. The ACB eForum may be accessed by email, on the ACB website, via download from the webpage in Word, plain text, or Braille Ready file, or by phone at 518-906-1820. To subscribe to the email version, contact Sharon Lovering, Slovering, @acb.org. The ACB Braille Forum is available by mail, in Braille, large print, NLS-style digital cartridge, and via email. It is also available to read or download from ACB's webpage and by phone, 518-906-1820. Subscribe to the podcast versions from your second-generation Victor Reader Stream or from https://pinecast.com/feed/acb-braille-forum-and-e-forum.